Chapter 16. The electricity failed just as they were wrapping the last of their sandwiches in the Metropolitan Cafe's tidy, white-tiled little kitchen. By then, Clay had tried three more times to get through to Maine, once to his old house, once to Kent Pond Elementary, where Sharon taught, and once to Joshua Chamberlain Middle School, which Johnny now attended. In no case did he get farther than Maine's 207 area code. When the lights in the Metropolitan went out, Alice screamed in what at first seemed to Clay like total darkness. Then the emergency lights came on, glare bright. Alice was not much comforted. She was clinging to Tom with one arm. In the other, she was brandishing the bread knife she'd used to cut the sandwiches with. Her eyes were wide and somehow flat, shocked. "Alice, put that knife down," Clay said, a little more sharply than he'd intended, "before you cut one of us with it." "Or yourself," Tom said in that mild and soothing voice of his. His spectacles glinted in the glare of the emergency lights. She put it down, then promptly picked it up again. "I want it," she said. "I want to take it with me. You have one, Clay. I want one." "All right," he said, "but you don't have a belt. We'll make you one from a tablecloth. For now, just be careful." Half the sandwiches were roast beef and cheese, half ham and cheese. Alice had wrapped them in saran wrap. Under the cash register, Clay found a stack of sacks with doggy bag written on one side and people bag written on the other. He and Tom tumbled the sandwiches into a pair of these. Into a third bag, they put three bottles of water. The tables had been made up for a dinner service that was never going to happen. Two or three had been tumbled over, but most stood perfect, with their glasses and silver shining in the hard light of the emergency boxes on the walls. Something about their calm orderliness hurt Clay's heart. The cleanliness of the folded napkins and the little electric lamps on each table. Those were now dark, and he had an idea it might be a long time before the bulbs inside lit up again. He saw Alice and Tom gazing about with faces as unhappy as his felt, and a desire to cheer them up, almost manic in its urgency, came over him. He remembered a trick he used to do for his son. He wondered again about Johnny's cell phone, and the panic rat took another nip out of him.
Clay hoped with all his heart the damned phone was lying forgotten under Johnny G's bed, among the dust kitties, with its battery flat, flat, flat.
"Watch this carefully," he said, setting his bag of sandwiches aside, "and please note that at no time do my hands leave my wrists." He grasped the hanging skirt of a tablecloth.
"This is hardly the time for parlor tricks," Tom said. "I want to see," Alice said.
For the first time since they'd met her, there was a smile on her face. It was small, but it was there. "We need the tablecloth," Clay said. "It won't take a second. And besides, the lady wants to see." He turned to Alice. "But you have to say a magic word. Shazam will do."
"Shazam," she said,
and Clay pulled briskly with both hands. He hadn't done the trick in 2, maybe even 3 years, and it almost didn't work. And yet at the same time, his mistake, some small hesitation in the pull, no doubt, actually added to the charm of the thing. Instead of staying where they were while the tablecloth magically disappeared from beneath them, all the place settings on the table moved about 4 inches to the right. The glass nearest to where Clay was standing actually wound up with its circular base half on and half off the table. Alice applauded, now laughing. Clay took a bow with his hands held out.
"Can we go now, O great vermicelli?" Tom asked,
but even Tom was smiling. Clay could see his small teeth in the emergency lights. "Soon as I rig this," Clay said. "She can carry the knife on one side and a bag of sandwiches on the other. You can tote the water." He folded the tablecloth over into a triangle shape, then rolled it quickly into a belt. He slipped a bag of sandwiches onto this by the bag's carrier handles, then put the tablecloth around the girl's slim waist, having to take a turn and a half and tie the knot in back to make the thing secure. He finished by sliding the serrated bread knife home on the right side.
"Say, you're pretty handy," Tom said.
"Handy as dandy," Clay said. And then something else blew up outside, close enough to shake the cafe.
The glass that had been standing half on and half off the table lost its balance, tumbled to the floor, and shattered. The three of them looked at it. Clay thought to tell them he didn't believe in omens,
but that would only make things worse. Besides, he did.
Chapter 17. Clay had his reasons for wanting to go back to the Atlantic Avenue Inn before they set off. One was to retrieve his portfolio, which he'd left sitting in the lobby. Another was to see if they couldn't find some sort of makeshift scabbard for Alice's knife. He reckoned even a shaving kit would do, if it was long enough. A third was to give Mr. Riccardi another chance to join them. He was surprised to find he wanted this even more than he wanted the forgotten portfolio of drawings. He had taken an odd, reluctant liking to the man. When he confessed this to Tom, Tom surprised him by nodding. "It's the way I feel about anchovies on pizza," he said. "I tell myself there's something disgusting about a combination of cheese, tomato sauce, and dead fish. But sometimes that shameful urge comes over me, and I can't stand against it." A blizzard of black ash and soot was blowing up the street and between the buildings. Car alarms warbled, burglar alarms brayed, and fire alarms clanged. There seemed to be no heat in the air, but Clay could hear the crackle of fire to the south and east of them. The smell of burning was stronger, too. They heard voices shouting, but these were to the southwest, back toward the common, where Boylston Street widened. When they got next door to the Atlantic Avenue Inn, Tom helped Clay push one of the Queen Anne chairs away from one of the broken glass door panels. The lobby beyond was now a pool of gloom in which Mr. Riccardi's desk and the sofa were only darker shadows. If Clay hadn't already been in there, he would have had no idea what those shadows represented. Above the elevators, a single emergency light guttered, the boxed battery beneath it buzzing like a horsefly. "Mr. Riccardi?" Tom called. "Mr. Riccardi, we came back to see if you changed your mind." There was no reply. After a moment, Alice began carefully to knock out the glass teeth that still jutted from the window frame. "Mr. Riccardi!" Tom called again, and when there was still no answer, he turned to Clay. "You're going in there, are you?" "Yes, to get my portfolio. It's got my drawings in it."
"You don't have copies?"
"Those are the originals," Clay said, as if this explained everything. To him it did. And besides, there was Mr. Riccardi. He'd said, "I'll be listening."
"What if Thumper from upstairs got him?" Tom asked.
"If that had happened, I think we'd have heard him thumping around down here," Clay said. "For that matter, he would have come running at the sound of our voice, babbling like the guy who tried to carve us up back by the common."
"You don't know that," Alice said.
She was gnawing at her lower lip.
"It's way too early for you to think you know all the rules."
Of course she was right, but they couldn't stand around here discussing it. That was no good either. "I'll be careful," he said, and put a leg over the bottom of the window. It was narrow, but plenty wide enough for him to climb through. "I'll just poke my head into his office. If he's not there, I won't go hunting around for him like a chick in a horror movie. I'll just grab my portfolio and we'll boogie."
"Keep yelling," Alice said. "Just say, 'Okay, I'm okay,' something like that, the whole time."
"All right. But if I stop yelling, just go. Don't come in after me."
"Don't worry," she said, unsmiling. "I saw all those movies, too. We've got Cinemax."
Chapter 18.
"I'm okay,"
Clay shouted, picking up his portfolio and then putting it down on the reception desk. Good to go, he thought, but not quite yet. He looked over his shoulder as he went around the desk and saw the one unblocked window glimmering, seeming to float in the thickening gloom, with two silhouettes cut into the day's last light. "I'm okay. Still okay. Just going in to check his office now. Still okay. Still o—"
"Clay?"
Tom's voice was clearly alarmed, but for a moment Clay couldn't respond and set Tom's mind at rest. There was an overhead light fixture in the middle of the inner office's high ceiling. Mr. Riccardi was hanging from it by what looked like a drape cord. A white bag was pulled down over his head. Clay thought it was the kind of plastic bag the hotel gave you to put your dirty laundry and dry cleaning in.
"Clay, are you all right?"
"Clay?"
Alice sounded shrill, ready to be hysterical.
"Okay,"
he heard himself say. His mouth seemed to be operating itself, with no help from his brain. Still right here. He was thinking of how Mr. Riccardi had looked when he said, I shall stay at my post. The words had been lofty, but the eyes had been scared and somehow humble. The eyes of a small raccoon driven into a corner of the garage by a large and angry dog. I'm coming out now. He backed away, as if Mr. Riccardi might slip his homemade drape-cord noose and come after him the second he turned his back. He was suddenly more than afraid for Sharon and Johnny. He was homesick for them, with a depth of feeling that made him think of his first day at school, his mother leaving him at the playground gate. The other parents had walked their kids inside, but his mother said, You just go in there, Clayton. It's the first room. You'll be fine. Boys should do this part alone. Before he did what she told him, he had watched her going away, back up Cedar Street, her blue coat. Now, standing here in the dark, he was renewing acquaintance with the knowledge that the second part of homesick was sick for a reason. Tom and Alice were fine, but he wanted the people he loved. Once he was around the reception desk, he faced the street and crossed the lobby. He got close enough to the long, broken window to see the frightened faces of his new friends, then remembered he had forgotten his fucking portfolio again and had to go back. Reaching for it, he felt certain that Mr. Riccardi's hand would steal out of the gathering darkness behind the desk and close over his. That didn't happen, but from overhead came another of those thumps. Something still up there. Something still blundering around in the dark. Something that had been human until 3 o'clock this afternoon. This time, when he was halfway to the door, the lobby's single battery-powered emergency light stuttered briefly, then went out. That's a fire code violation, Clay thought. I ought to report that. He handed out his portfolio. Tom took it. Where is he? Alice asked. Wasn't he there? Dead, Clay said. It had crossed his mind to lie, but he didn't think he was capable. He was too shocked by what he had seen. How did a man hang himself? He didn't see how it was even possible. Suicide. Alice began to cry, and it occurred to Clay that she didn't know that if it had been up to Mr. Riccardi,
she'd probably be dead herself now.
The thing was, he felt a little like crying himself, because Mr. Riccardi had come around. Maybe most people did, if they got a chance. From west of them on the darkening street, back toward the common, came a scream that seemed too great to have issued from human lungs. It sounded to Clay almost like the trumpeting of an elephant. There was no pain in it, and no joy. There was only madness. Alice cringed against him, and he put an arm around her. The feel of her body was like the feel of an electrical wire with a strong current passing through it.
If we're going to get out of here, let's do it, Tom said. If we don't run into too much trouble, we should be able to get as far north as Malden and spend the night at my place.
That's a hell of a good idea, Clay said. Tom smiled cautiously.
You really think so?
I really do. Who knows? Maybe Officer Ashland's already there.
Who's Officer Ashland? Alice asked.
A policeman we met back by the common, Tom said. He helped us out. The three of them were now walking east toward Atlantic Avenue, through the falling ash and the sound of alarms.
We won't see him, though. Clay's just trying to be funny.
Oh, she said. I'm glad somebody's trying to be.
Lying on the pavement by a litter barrel was a blue cell phone with a cracked casing. Alice kicked it into the gutter without breaking stride.
Good one, Clay said.
Alice shrugged.
5 years of soccer, she said.
And at that moment, the streetlights came on, like a promise that all was not yet lost.